I'm Spencer Beckwith for KUNM. Balloonists are filling the skies over Albuquerque this month, so it might be a good time to consider the histories of their predecessors, the intrepid first aeronauts, the men and women who pioneered the science and art of ballooning in the 18th and 19th centuries. The great biographer Richard Holmes tells their stories in Falling Upwards, How We Took to the Air. And Richard Holmes joins us from his home in London. Mr. Holmes, welcome.
Welcome. I wish I could be with you by balloon, but we're nearly there.
Maybe we can do that in the future. I certainly hope so. You started telling the stories of the first balloonists in your previous book, The Age of Wonder. What made you decide to continue those stories and other stories in Falling Upwards?
Right. I've got a chapter on that in The Age of Wonder, and it seemed to me that the history of flight was insufficiently known. I mean, most people, if you say first flight, they will say Wright Brothers, Kitty Hawk, 1903. And in fact, the history of balloons goes almost 100 years previous to that, right back to about 1783. So I thought that was one thing. And then I got, as a biographer, very interested in both the men and the women who flew in balloons. Very strange, fascinating, eccentric group of people. Also, there was something about the romance of ballooning. I've written before about the romantic poets, and somehow there was the same kind of imagination going on, the same kind of dreams among the balloonists, and it runs right through the 19th century. So it seemed to me a very rich topic to explore.
As you said, your great interest as a biographer is in that romantic generation of artists and scientists.
Yeah.
And the first balloonists fit very comfortably into that spirit of the romantic era.
They do. The first, very earliest balloons were sent off in France, but the Brits and the Americans were there. Franklin, the great Benjamin Franklin, observed the very early balloon flights, which were the Montgolfiers, the hot air balloons, when they came to Paris in 1783. And he wrote some very good reports about the first flights. And also this wonderful remark, he said, someone asked me, what's the possible use of a balloon? Because it wasn't evident what function they had. And he replied, what's the possible use of a newborn baby? That's a wonderful idea that
right.
All its life is ahead of it, and all the balloon life is ahead of it. And Franklin saw, immediately he wrote reports to the Royal Society in London about the French balloons, what they might be capable of. And he saw immediately they, for instance, had possible military applications. You might be able to fly small armies even beneath balloons. So this is one of Franklin's suggestions for early ballooning.
Nobody quite knew at the beginning what ballooning would be useful for, or if it would be useful at all. So people were exploring different directions for ballooning.
And this is where the science also becomes very interesting. Ballooning became possible, first of all, because the gas, what they call the artificial air of hydrogen, was isolated. And you can weigh those gases, including hydrogen. It's about 14 times lighter than air. And so suddenly you've got this substance that can provide something called lift. And the question is how you hold that down, how you seal it. And there were various forms. The first balloons were paper balloons, actually, huge paper balloons sewn together, and then silken balloons. First flight, 1783 over Paris, lasted about 25 minutes, not very high. But immediately, this was clear. People said this was a revolution as big as shipping. But what could you do with a balloon? And for the first 20 years of ballooning, people believed you could steer balloons. This was a great idea. So they had amazing contraptions of wings and sort of aerial oars and propellers with the idea that you could take off at A and direct yourself to B. And that's the one thing you can't do in a balloon. You can take off at A, but you can only get to X. You never know where you're going. But this took 20 years of experiment to find out. Meanwhile, there were quite heroic flights. Once, the first crossing of the English Channel, the British Channel, from Dover across to Calais. And that really excited people because suddenly you could fly from one country to another. But again, the direction entirely depended on the wind. So there was a lot of experimentation at the end of the 18th century, the early 19th century, what you could do with the balloons. And it only slowly emerged what you might be able to do.
And of course, part of what people could do was to make scientific discoveries, which they did. But you indicate in your book that perhaps the greatest benefit that balloon flight gave us early on was the ability to gaze back upon the Earth from a great height.
Yes, one of the arguments of the book is, what's the function of flying apart from things like transport? And one is definitely this almost metaphysical idea that if you can get sufficiently high above the Earth, you can look back and see what it's really like. And this is in the very early French balloon flights, a wonderful man called Dr. Alexandre Charles, who was in the first actual hydrogen balloon, which was about a month later than the first Hot Air Montgolfier. And he wrote and published a wonderful account of flying up to 10,000 feet and how he saw the sun set twice, once when he was on the ground and once when he was higher up. And he said that suddenly you see the Earth and you see mankind in a different perspective. And also you observe the clouds and what they really are, because no one had no idea what they were. For example, they didn't even know if they'd be electrocuted when they flew a balloon through a cloud. So you suddenly have this completely new perspective on the nature of our planet. And this becomes more, even more scientific than the whole idea of meteorology, of weather forecasting, of storms and clouds and so on, and the atmosphere itself. These ideas gradually develop through ballooning.
One of the things that they also observed from that great height was the impact that man was having on the landscape, which people really were not that aware of until they were able to get up very high.
For example, there are wonderful descriptions in the early 1840s and 50s of the great cities, both in England and in Europe. The balloon is flying over the cities, the first great industrial cities. A wonderful balloonist called Charles Green made a night flight, one of the first long-distance night flights, from London over into Germany, and they crossed Belgium at night. And there's a fantastic description of seeing the first iron foundries stretching out from horizon to horizon with the light, you can imagine, blazing up, and then the smell of the foundries, and then you could actually hear the workers blow on the night shift. So you suddenly get an image of what an industrial civilization is like coming from the balloonists. Later, Victorian journalists flying over London, they suddenly see the immense gap between the wealthy parts of London and the poor parts, the East End. You not only see it, but at night you see the different kinds of lighting, wonderful descriptions of the gin palaces up in the smart West End, and then the tragic taverns and brothels in the East End. Also, you smell, the city smells differently, and you can see how its edges are pushing out into the countryside. So you begin to get a kind of history from above there, and history of mankind from above, and that also goes into the first observations of modern battlefields in the American Civil War. So yes, you have a new sense of man's impact in general upon the Earth, upon the planet.
Now, you mentioned the use of balloons in the Civil War. That's a very interesting part of the book and how the early balloonists in the 19th century affected, really, reconnaissance for various armies.
I mean, the history of American ballooning, particularly in the 1850s, 1860s, absolutely fascinating. One or two absolutely heroic figures, John Wise, who flew one famous trip in 1859. He's the first man to fly over Niagara and describe that, and the balloon went right on over 800 miles across Lake Ontario and so on. And he was trying actually to start a mail service, which connects into what was going to happen in the Civil War. And then a kind of rival of his, with a wonderful name of Thaddeus S. Lowe, I love that, Thaddeus S. Lowe, who described himself as a professor, and he volunteered to start a balloon service for the Union at the outbreak of the Civil War, and he brought his balloon down to Washington, and he took up the first telegraph wire, and he sent a telegram or a telegraph message to the White House, and it went directly to Lincoln. And the text of this, it's a famous, quite short saying, I can see for 50 miles around the capital city, And I can be of great help to the Union in the sense of this kind of military observation intelligence. And Lincoln had him in that very evening, and they started a particular balloon regiment. And the accounts that Lowe leaves, particularly in the early part, the first 2 years of the Civil War in the Virginia Peninsula and the siege of Richmond and so on, those are amazing accounts. And also very sobering, because for the first time, someone is seeing a modern battlefield to see without actually being involved in it. So you're above, you're like an angel's eye, but you see the effect of modern weapons and the Springfield rifle and the big howitzers and so on. And these are described. So again, you have the balloon being useful to the state, useful to the Union, but also giving you this very sober view of what mankind is doing. It's a double aspect that goes right through the book.
You visited Albuquerque in 2010 to attend the balloon fiesta. Did the modern balloonists here in Albuquerque remind you of their historical predecessors in any way?
Yes, that was 2010. That was a wonderful trip. I remember I went up in one of those mass ascents, and you get 300 or even 400 balloons going out at the same time. And I went to a party of balloonists. They were very nice. They invited me afterwards. Yes, I completely recognize. It's the same thing. It's this wonderful mixture of, there's a sort of daredevil element, but there's also a very cool, kind of meticulous element. And I have to say, you know, when they talk about balloons, a little glint comes in their eye, something very special that I recognize, just the sheer delight in flying. And of course, it is, for anybody who hasn't been up in a balloon, it is an astonishing experience, and it's very beautiful. And it's a mixture of a mild terror and complete euphoric delight, and something very, very special. And you do see the world in a completely different way.
Whereas flying in an airplane is much different today than it was in the early years, ballooning is still very much like it was for those very first balloonists. We still have the same reactions to being up in a balloon as they did.
Absolutely. I mean, the modern hydrogen balloons or helium balloons equipped in very similar way. The materials have improved, of course, the ripstop materials, but the principle is the same, and the experience is completely the same because the 19th century descriptions are exactly the same. One very simple thing, takeoff. The first time you take off, it's not like a plane, rumble, rumble, and whoops, into the air. With a balloon, you're looking down, and suddenly you notice the ground is dropping away, not you going up. It's just the ground is going away. But it's completely calm as well. And the landscape just opens up around you. And you enter into a different world. It's utterly different from flying in an airplane.
Biographer Richard Holmes tells the stories of the daring pioneers of ballooning in his fascinating book, Falling Upwards, How We Took to the Air. The paperback edition was published last year by Vintage. Many thanks for sharing all this wonderful information with us, Mr. Holmes.
That's been a great pleasure. And my greetings to anybody concerned at the balloon fiesta, which I hope goes very, very well.
Thank you. For KUNM, I'm Spencer Beckwith.